This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Neil Langto. His new book is The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, the three progressives of the beginning of the 20th century, know each other very well and maneuver in public. Everything's in public. They write letters. They're published. The headlines are all filled with what Wilson says, what TR says, what Jane Addams has done in Europe when she visited Vienna and commented on the horse ribs sticking out because they were starving. That made it into the newspapers. When she sailed back to home, there was concern about her safety because of the German submarines. These were daily conversation pieces in the big city, especially in New York, which was 10% of the population. And America is now the richest country on the planet. So all of these are not backwaters. These are major decisions. And we come to the winter of 1915-1916, and we start with Teddy Roosevelt because he has been, well, you can fill in the blanks of what he thinks about Wilson, keep writing strong notes to Berlin. And he's already disdained Jane Addams as naive or worse. So in January and February of 1916, the winter time, is he planning to run for the presidency? Does he open relations again with the party he rejected? Do they welcome him, Neil?
There were signs that he was moving in that direction. I mean, he felt for a long time that no one was listening to him because the great cause he had been involved with since the war began was what they call preparedness, being prepared militarily because our country was so limited in its military power. We had 100,000 men or something like that, although our Navy was decent size. So he had been preaching that message. It was starting to catch on in late 1915, particularly after the Lusitania. People started to realize that there was some worth in what he was saying. And by the end of the year, you have papers like the New York Tribune endorsing him for president, which was a big shock because the New York Tribune was a fairly solid Republican paper. And they're already saying this man could be the standard bearer for the Republican Party. So there's a lot of things in the air in late 1915, early 1916. Roosevelt feels it himself. The thing that he has to somehow pull off is getting the Republican honchos to accept him again. And that's going to be a very difficult act to play. He knows he can get the progressive nomination again because the party, even though it's kind of not much of anything at this point, they'll nominate him again. So he's got that. But he has to get the Republicans to nominate him as well. And if he can pull that off somehow, unite these two parties, he can possibly win the election in a fight against Wilson. But it's going to be a very, very tall order to pull off because there is a great deal of bitterness in the Republican Party that he had split the party in 1912 and he had allowed Wilson to be elected president. So if he's got to show the Republicans that he has the personal following and that he is the only man who can beat Woodrow Wilson in 1916, and that's not going to be easy.
Woodrow Wilson has sent notes to Berlin and has said he's too proud to fight, which confounds TR. He doesn't know what it means. No one's too proud to fight unless, and then TR makes it very clear that he dismisses Wilson's masculinity. TR had a language that is lost to us here in the 21st century about masculinity, about being a man. It was very important to him. He'd had a troubled childhood he was underweight and understrength. He had afflictions that he conquered with his willfulness, living up to his father, living up to his idea of being heroic. Wilson, of course, comes from a completely different situation where the life of the mind was everything to Wilson. Wilson understands, however, he's being challenged on his reluctance to get involved in Europe, and he goes on a speaking tour. It's foreshadowing of the speaking tour he will make in order to sell the Versailles Treaty to America that leads to a tragedy. So in this tour, my note says he starts January 31st into February. 130,000 people see him. Many more people read the newspapers. He's talking about preparedness. Does America believe him?
I think he convinced a few people here and there, but the problem for Wilson was the Midwest and the South. And that's where he did. He went in the Midwest in this speaking tour. That part of the country was still fairly ambivalent about a military buildup. I think the East Coast was fairly strong in support of it. So he had to try to convince the sort of the plain people of the Midwest, you know, the farmers, and a lot of them just did not understand that. You know, we had never been a military power. There was still this sort of belief that, well, if we ever have to go to war, we'll just kind of rustle up an army within a month or so, and we'll be ready to go. But Wilson tried during this speaking tour, he kept using the analogy that the world's on fire and I cannot keep the sparks from striking the roof of America and setting us on fire as well. You know, I'm not superhuman. And Wilson, in some ways, had been superhuman in keeping us out because there had been all these provocations with Germany. He had been the diplomacy that was involved to somehow keep us from being involved in this war is fairly impressive. Because certainly it would have been very easy for him to go to war, which he really did not want to do. So that's going to be the issue, though, is getting some sort of package through Congress for a defense buildup. And he will eventually get it through in the summer of 1916. But people like Roosevelt felt it was still insufficient. It was not nearly enough and that we should have prepared sooner. In some ways, Roosevelt proved to be right, because when we do eventually get in the war, we're really not ready. And it takes us a long time to be able to send a decent-sized army to Europe in 1917, 1918. And if we had started preparing sooner, we probably would have been able to do it sooner as well.
We have a very large peace movement in the United States that doesn't voice it, but it's certainly in sympathy as this part, the middle part of the country, away from the big cities. Remember, the country was 10% New York, so it was heavily East Coast here. And we're looking at a case that Wilson is making at the same time Teddy Roosevelt is making the case. We've got to be prepared. Jane Addams, she falls ill. There's suggestion that the illness is convenient. How so, Neil?
Well, at one point, she was going to be part of Henry Ford, who we haven't mentioned yet. Henry Ford, obviously a major figure in American life at the time because of the Model T and the Ford Motor Company. Ford had lots of money to play with and didn't quite know what to do with it all the time. He decided he was going to get involved in the peace movement. He believed in his own basic way that war was wasteful and an enemy to everything. And the pacifist managed to get to him, and he does agree to throw some of his fortune into the peace movement. And what Addams and a lot of her followers have been pushing for is some sort of conference of neutrals, which would be a stepping stone to an eventual peace conference that would kind of be a way to end the war. So Ford says, I'll get behind that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to charter a boat. I'm going to take all these people across the Atlantic Ocean. And this is where the peace conference will be held, or the conference of neutrals will be held. Unfortunately, it became sort of a PR disaster for pacifism because it was thrown together in a very haphazard manner. And it was done so quickly, and the message again became scrambled to the American public. People thought, oh, well, Henry Ford is going to take this peace ship and it's going to go across the ocean. It's going to somehow stop the war. All the part about the actual conference of neutrals, which is what Jane Addams wanted to do, was being lost in the shuffle. Addams, however, was like, I'll go, you know, even though I think the way Ford is going about this is wrong, but I'm going to go, I'm going to take the ship and go across and get involved in this thing that they're trying to set up. But she became ill right before they sailed. But some people, including Henry Ford himself, believed she was faking, that she was, in fact, simply trying to avoid going. And I think he believed that for the rest of his life. Jane Addams' letters confirm that she was, in fact, ill. She had had tuberculosis as a young woman, and she would have constant flares of it at times, which would leave her bedridden. So that's why she didn't go on that. And she certainly was never someone who shied from controversy, but Ford believed it. It was probably a good thing she didn't go, because the entire trip turned out to be somewhat of a disaster. And instead, the journalist who went along on the peace ship in late 1915 really derided it and made it seem very foolish. And Ford seemed very foolish, and pacifism seemed very foolish.
In the meantime, there are submarines approaching more passenger ships. The book is The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Addams. Neil Lengto is the author. When we come back, The Sussex. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.